Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
Sunday the 5th of March. A snow and ice warning has been issued for North and Central for early next week. So spring isn't quite sprung yet, Kev. Is it the beast from the east? I guess we'll find out. So don't complain you're cold coming in from the Red Sea at 30 degrees because it is pretty damn cold.
Well, we've had a bit of a blast from the south, I think. Blast from the south, because this week's been very, very nice, into the 30s every day. So I took the opportunity to go to the Red Sea, swim in very cold sea, but it was nice.
Good. I was reading quite an interesting article on the BBC website earlier. It's it was by Simon Jack, the BBC's business editor, and it was entitled, the title of it was, "Is London Stock Market Losing Its Luster?" It's over a year since UK hedge fund boss Sir Paul Marshall declared that London was becoming a financial Jurassic Park full of beasts of a bygone era. And the news came of Arm Holdings and CRH were moving their primary listings from London to the US due to higher valuations and trading volumes. And obviously that's something we've alluded to in the past about, you know, more liquidity, higher valuations for a lot of peer companies. And other UK listed companies have also been taken private by foreign investors. UK pension funds are shunning UK listed companies as well. So I just wondered what your thoughts on it. I mean, this exodus has led to the UK government trying to propose new rules to make the UK a more attractive place for companies to list. But obviously the allure of US stock markets remains strong for companies looking to raise money and maximize their worth. So we've seen quite a lot of UK companies now obviously going for dual listings on the OTCQB. But what are your thoughts on that? How do you think the government can kind of bring in, or entice more companies to list on the UK markets?
Well, first of all, it's got to keep what it's got. You know, yeah. I mean, there was talk that Shell was going to move, wasn't there, only in 2021? I don't think people quite realize the tax revenues that some of these big giant companies actually add to the UK, you know, balance of payments, if you like. It's huge. So what can they do? I think we have to have a better tax situation for companies. Otherwise, what we're going to be is we're going to be a small cap incubator for bigger markets, whether that be predominantly that's going to be the US, isn't it? So if you like, we're going to be a feeder to the US market, which maybe in essence we already are, but if some of the big boys jump as well, then that's going to have a massive effect on the UK economy as well, never mind just the UK stock market. So it's not good. But you can't blame them, because the value is not being shown in the UK stock market. I mean, we can see that in we can see that in the small caps. Like, it's as clear as day, you know, that the companies are not being valued based on their potential future. They're just being based on, you know, a lot of them just that they're going to fail.
Do you think it's the case that the US was maybe overvalued? I mean, I know it certainly has been overvalued in the past, but do you think that even there's a middle ground there? Do you think, you know, if you could move the UK companies to even half the value of some of these companies, it would add a lot of value, wouldn't it, to the companies, the UK ones?
Yeah, I mean, in a small cap basis, the small cap market would probably double or treble overnight, I think, literally. In terms of the FTSE, I mean, we were joking, like the FTSE hit an all-time high, but 18 years ago, that was basically from when that was. So it is, it's wrong to say it's not fair, because fairness has got nothing to do with it. It is about liquidity, and it is about people's willingness to risk, isn't it? You know, there is a risk-off situation in the UK markets and has been for quite a while. But we saw during the Corona Casino, as you called it, or other people called it, that people were looking at the future at that time and saying these stocks could do well, and they were getting valued up because of it. Some were right, some were wrong. But ultimately, most of them have come back down again, haven't they? If not all of them.
Absolutely. There was another pretty somber point. The MI5 Director General Ken McCallum expressed regret that intelligence that could have prevented the 2017 Manchester Arena bombing was not obtained. Public inquiry found that MI5 missed a chance to take action that could have stopped suicide bomber Salman Abedi. The inquiry found that two pieces of information were assessed as not being terrorism related and that a possible pressing national security concern was not immediately discussed with colleagues nor written up in a report. Had MI5 acted on the intelligence received, Abedi could have been stopped at Manchester airport on his return from Libya 4 days before the attack. And then another big talking point this week was obviously the recent news of Boris Johnson expressing difficulty in voting for Rishi Sunak's new Brexit deal for Northern Ireland could be a significant talking point. I mean, the development highlights the ongoing struggles of the UK government to address post-Brexit trade problems in Northern Ireland, despite the deal's potential positive impact on businesses and people in Northern Ireland. What's your take on that? What do you think of this new UK-EU Brexit deal?
Well, I think we have another man who's been involved in politics in Ireland that could maybe shed some light on this one. What do you think?
Yeah, so we know a man who can, Colin. That leads us on to this week's guest, Professor Richard Conroy of Conroy Gold and Natural Resources. Welcome, Richard. How's things?
Things are very good indeed, exceptionally good for us. So we're in a very happy mood. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, back to the talking point we were alluded to with Rishi Sunak's new Brexit deal for Northern Ireland. I mean, obviously, a man who's on the ground there, obviously, you know, and with assets in Northern Ireland. What are your thoughts on this new UK-EU deal?
Certainly very pleased to see that progress has been made. I think it's to the benefit of all parties concerned that certainly some of the business difficulties which had arisen from the protocol, they seem to be very much sorted out or well on their way to being sorted out now. And I think that's to the benefit of Northern Ireland, the United Kingdom as a whole, and of course to the rest of Ireland, and probably also the benefit of the EU. And certainly from a business point of view, one would like to see the best possible relationship between the parties concerned. It's to all our mutual benefits. So that would be our attitude on the matter.
So I mean, it's always good to hear a different viewpoint. You know, it's always good, hopefully, that things have progressed and is actually voted through, because certainly if Boris has his way, I don't think he'll be voting in favour for it. That's for sure. So we have some very exciting news this week. It seems like news flow. We've gone from a sort of period of, quite quiet. And then we've had, four or five RNSs in the last probably month now of new gold target discoveries. And obviously the recent one was the gold target discovery in County Monaghan, yielding values greater than, I think, anything above this 10 parts per billion of gold over, obviously, quite a large area. Does potentially lead to what could be a recent high-grade discovery. So do you want to just give us your thoughts on the recent news?
Well, it's certainly, as you say, been almost a deluge of news as things have certainly been going extremely well. The latest news is a further addition to this. And we've known for a very long time, that's why we were exploring in the area, that there was tremendous potential there for gold. We're now seeing the results of this. A couple of weeks ago, we had those magnificent results in relation to the grades. Those are very, very high grades. Not only the highest grades that we've ever seen, but high grades by the highest international standards. So that was excellent. And now we're seeing the development of a second gold trend. And of course, already along the first gold trend, the 65-kilometer one that we discovered, and we've a whole series of gold targets along there and potential for multimillion-ounce discoveries. We're now adding to that a second gold trend. So the overall picture in the district as a whole is continuing to increase. I mean, we always had high hopes of it, but certainly we're seeing these hopes not only justified, but exceeded. So it's a very happy period for us. We're very, very pleased, as you can imagine.
So just to come back to this latest RNS before we talk about the whole of Conroy Gold and what's actually happening. Tell us the five licenses that you've applied for. I'm assuming this is all within the joint venture, because these are the guys that have discovered it along with you in this process.
Well, that's not strictly correct, because you may remember that before the deal was actually completed, we had already applied for three further licenses and agreed as part of the deal that these three further licenses would in due course go to the joint venture. Now, under the regulations, without boring you over it, but under the regulations, to transfer a license, the company that wishes to transfer it must have completed its first two-year commitments. Having completed those commitments, it can then apply to have the licenses transferred. We've completed the commitments and will in due course be applying for the, or at least we're now entitled to apply for them to be transferred to the joint venture, and that's what we will be doing for those three licenses. Now, as it so happens, on one of those licenses, which is the subject of this morning's news release, that is one of those licenses. It's still at this moment in time, technically or legally, a Conroy Gold and Natural Resources license, but it's one that's going to obviously go to the joint venture. The other applications, well, having come up with this news, one of the things that you immediately move to do is to apply for adjoining acreage. And that we have done, put in those five applications, as mentioned in the news release. Obviously, that'll be something to be discussed further with our joint venture partners in due course.
Okay, so as of now, they're going to be Conroy Gold ones if they are given, but then there can be discussion to add those to the joint venture.
They will have to be under the various regulations, and we have to make sure we're meticulous in fulfilling all the regulations. The party has to apply for a license, and then if it's granted that license, then it may, after fulfilling the first two-year commitment on the license, apply to have that license transferred to a subsidiary company, joint venture company, whatever. But under the regulations, which obviously we have to follow, that's the situation.
A general question then.
Yeah.
How did this all come about? Because it seems now that there is a huge area of 65 kilometers and possibly more now that we're talking about this other thing in Monaghan, of strike, of gold, of obviously a situation where there has been some coming together of plates underground that has then allowed this gold to come up. And we have two types of gold now as well. So we're not just talking about one system, are we? We're talking about probably more than one system, at least two. So give everybody an overview of what's happening and where we're at.
Well, the overview is that it's a very large gold district that we've discovered, and we thought it might have very considerable potential. But I must say, the sort of results that we've been getting over there, particularly the ones last week, way exceeded anyone's expectations. And remember, we started off from a very small base many years ago, and what you're seeing today, of course, is the culmination of 20 years of very hard work, often under difficult conditions, both in exploration terms and in financial terms and so on. It's come to a fantastic conclusion, but it was, you know, a long, difficult, demanding, challenging course. But it started with a discovery of gold many years ago down an old antimony mine, a discovery that I remember from my sort of very early childhood days. There was a lot of excitement about it at the time. But that particular discovery really went nowhere after that. There was quite a bit of drilling around it with very low grades or traces of gold. And eventually, after a number of companies had tried, they gave up. And we looked at this and tried to work out, well, why and how could this have happened? And why had good gold grades down the old antimony mine not been replicated outside? So that was one of our starting points. And we spent a long time looking at it and thinking about it before we even applied for the first license. The other starting point, and this comes to your comment about the types of gold and so on, was also very interesting. In the Llantybryd, the old antimony mine, the gold was dissolved into the rock, so you couldn't see it. And that's one form in which gold is found. Some of the big Nevada discoveries have been like that. But quite apart from that, there was this intriguing discovery of a nugget of gold in Clay Lake, fairly close to, a few miles away from the Tontibra discovery down the old antimony mine. And this gold, as I've just said, was a nugget, and quite a big nugget, and clearly hadn't moved very far. And there it was, and no explanation for it. But nonetheless, the reality was it was there, and the reality was that gold had been found down the old antimony mine in Tontibra. So our strategy, after a lot of thought, was not simply to go for Clontibra alone, to look for a gold deposit there. That would have been very reasonable and very rational. But what we were looking for was some form of world-class discovery. And we've been fortunate enough on a couple of previous occasions, both in Ireland at Galmoy and out in Alaska with the Pogo gold discovery there, to be involved in such discoveries. Now, mind you, they don't come anywhere near what we're now looking at in the Longford Down Massif, because there, after a tremendous amount of work, over, as I've said, many years, tens of thousands of samples, I think 20-odd thousand to be precise, of soil samples, a lot of other work, drilling, trenching, all sorts of things, geophysics and all the rest of it, we gradually outlined a trend which includes Clontibra. It doesn't start at Clontibra. It includes Clontibra, a trend which runs for approximately 65 kilometers, about 40 miles, I suppose, thereabouts, and has significant gold from targets such as Clay Lake, which is a much bigger footprint than Clontibra. Clontibra itself, which is not to be sniffed at, you're probably going to look at 2.5-3 million ounces, even down to a shallow low. Lenish, another target next to it. And then a whole series of targets for about 25 miles, right down to an area called Steve La, in which there are a number of other gold targets. And because we were out there working, and quite frankly, working on our own, we had some of the major companies did come and visit us and found it interesting and so on, technical point of view. But by and large, despite the magnificent history of gold ornaments and so on in Ireland dating back thousands of years, people didn't really associate in modern terms the potential that Ireland has for gold. In fairly substantial, as we're seeing now, quantities. And under the Irish licensing system, both north and south, if you do your exploration work, fulfill your commitments, which means putting the money into the ground, it's a very good system because the money is going into the ground. It's not been paid in rentals or anything of that nature. It's actually solidly going into the ground. And if you do that, you can retain your licenses and gradually build them up. That's unusual. Most parts of the world, they'll give the license to you, you'll have to start giving it up, or you'll have to be paying exorbitant rental fees or whatever. In the Irish system, they do, I have to say, in all fairness to the regulatory authorities concerned, they concentrate on your actually doing work in the ground. But that has a great advantage in return to the company, that if you do that work, you can gradually build up your license area. We've built up the license area over the gold trend to now about 500 square miles, somewhere in the region of about 1,000 square kilometers to bring in all the licenses and so on. So it's a very extensive area, but it is a fulfillment of our strategy in that we've made potentially world-class gold discovery. Well, I think it is now. It's not no longer talk about potential. And because of the fact that we've worked at it over the number of years, challenging though that was, we have been able to license the, as far as we can see, the entire gold district, certainly on the first trend. And that's a very, very unique situation. If you're lucky as a small exploration company, and we, of course, are a very small exploration company, if you're lucky, you find a gold deposit, and you're absolutely delighted, and rightly so, to find it, and you bring in a partner to develop that gold deposit. Well, we've done far more than that. We've found an entire gold district, and there are a whole series of targets on it. We've been very confident of the fact that the targets, that many of them could be developed, that we would have the volume. But what has been tremendous about the results coming out, particularly those last week, is the fact that we're now seeing these magnificent grades as well. And if you want to have a very profitable gold property, there are two things you need. You need the volume, the number of ounces, and you need the grade. And it looks very much as though we've both got both the volume and the grade, and got it over, may well have it over a whole series of targets. So it's an extremely exciting position to be in. And so we're absolutely thrilled with the results on the ground and the guys who worked at it, and fair play to them. But the other, of course, requirement is that you have a joint venture partner. And we were very slow to bring in a partner. We felt we'd get on with the exploration. It was difficult at times, and people would say to me, why don't you bring somebody in at this stage? Well, I don't think we'd have made the progress that we have made if we'd done so prematurely. Whereas now we have the entire gold district. We've brought in a partner, very good partner with ample financial backup, which you're now seeing the results of. And at the same time, under the terms of the agreement, we can retain up to 42.5% of each of the projects that are developed into a mine. And that's an exceptionally good position to be in. It would be an excellent position if we're just looking at a single deposit. As a junior, you're very lucky if you hold on to 10 or 15%. We'll be able to hold on to 42.5% and have other options as well if we wish to be carried or whatever. But we're not looking at just one gold deposit, as is very evident. We're looking at the potential for a whole series of gold deposits. So it is a really tremendous situation to be in. And the results that have come out over the last few weeks have been transformational results for the company. It's been what we've been aiming at. It's been our strategy. But it's, you know, there are many, many, many challenges along the way. And it's tremendous now to be at the stage when we're achieving them. We're going shortly to the major mining conference out in Toronto, the PDEC mining conference. And we'll be looking forward to discussing these developments with other people in the industry. This is a very major development indeed. And we're delighted to be at this stage. So we're very happy.
Yeah, you know, you've alluded to that it's gone from a potential that's looking like a gold district. But what is the market missing right now in terms of, you know, you've got the 517,000 ounces as a JORC report. How can you add more resources to that JORC in terms of, you know, building the resources, really, and building the potential?
Well, that resource is only over a very small part of only one of the targets. So that 500,000 ounces, which is very nice in itself, don't misunderstand me. If we were a small company and had made just the one gold deposit discovery, we'd be very, very happy to be starting off with 500,000 ounces on probably less than 20% of it, and on that, just down to 200 or 300 meters. But of course, that's not the situation. That 500,000 that you refer to is 500,000 on a small part of one of the targets. And indeed, one of the other tremendously exciting things relating specifically now to Clontibret was the results of a drill hole there a few weeks back, which indicates that the actual area of the resource, the small part of the deposit, about 20% or whatever of the deposit, that area almost certainly links up with the Corkiski area, where many years ago, some absolutely excellent grade results were discovered in trenching. So that, in fact, transforms even the Clontibret deposit. We're still thinking of it in terms of maybe 2.5 million, 3 million ounces, something like that. And that's discounting anything that there may be at depth, and it certainly extends down to depth, and that's a whole story in itself. But over and beyond that, it now appears that it links up with the very, very exciting Corkiski area. So Clontibret itself has moved a major step forward just over the last few weeks. And that's also very exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that. I'm just trying to sort of get in my mind what the roadmap is in terms of, you know, going from an estimated to an inferred to an indicated or something like that.
But that's only a minor part of it.
Sure.
Forgive me cutting in on you. That's only a minor part of it. If you're just looking at one deposit.
Yeah.
And this is where I say we're in a very different position from a company which has discovered a deposit
Sure.
And I'm not in any way, don't think I'm in any way dismissing that.
Yeah.
For a small company to discover a big gold deposit is very nice indeed. And if that were our situation and only our situation, we'd still be very pleased. And we'd be delighted to see a 500,000 resource on 20% of the shallower areas of it. Don't misunderstand me. And we'd be going through the process of, as you mentioned, inferred, indicated, and then finally you move on. That's the resource category, and then you move on to the reserve category when you're bringing in the financials, and how much of it are you actually going to mine, and at what grade you're going to mine it, and how many ounces per annum, and this sort of thing. And we'll be doing that, and indeed have done preliminary work on that, as regards Clontibret, and we'll be doing a lot more, because very obviously a mine can be brought in on Clontibret, even on what we're looking at already, and there's obviously a lot more there. And that would be absolutely tremendous if we were a small exploration company and we'd made that discovery. But of course, this is of a totally different, far, far greater magnitude, in that it's not just a question of doing inferred, indicated, proven resources or reserves at Clontibret. It is the fact, first of all, Clontibret itself now looks as though it's far, far bigger than even we had imagined. And secondly, of course, Clontibret is only the first, and by no means necessarily the largest. It's most unlikely that it is, just up the road at Clay Lake. And that's likely to be far larger, on present knowledge, than Clontibret. And then we're seeing down to the south of Clay Lake, about, I suppose, 15 kilometres or so to the south of it, these absolutely marvellous grades. They are very, very high grades by any standards. And then as well as that, we have a series of other targets. And I think the market just doesn't even begin to understand this. And to some extent, this is perhaps maybe a little bit frustrating for us, or even annoying at times, but it is in many ways understandable, because most discoveries are made in known areas for gold or for zinc or whatever. And I suppose it's fortunate from our point of view, management's point of view anyway, that we've been round the course before of making a discovery at a time when people told us that we shouldn't even be bothering exploring, that the majors had been in, and if there was anything else to be found, they'd have found it. Well, we came along, and by adopting a slightly new approach, using more geophysics and geochemistry combined, we made the Galmoy discoveries. And then the Chevron people discovered another deposit just down along the road. And Ireland is now recognized as an international zinc province. And pretty well all the significant zinc companies are here exploring or hoping to develop or make other discoveries and so on. And we ourselves, by the way, in our area up in the Longford Down Massif, have some very interesting zinc and base metal recoveries. But of course, the gold is infinitely more important at this stage. At any rate, we'll neglect the base metals. So it's from a technical point of view, it's very understandable. The major companies tend to go in where there are other majors already. That's normal and understandable. So that's from the industry point of view. But I mean, the word is, I think, beginning to spread around the industry that we've made a pretty interesting new discovery.
Professor Gunroy, with that many leprechauns in Ireland, there has to be gold in Ireland. I mean, let's be honest.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. But you know, nobody realized that before. If we hadn't spotted one or two friendly ones, we wouldn't be where we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But on a more serious note, so people understand.
Yeah.
The thing that you've announced today,
yeah,
suggests that there are now two seams, if you like, or two trends, yeah, of gold.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How does that position itself? So we've got, and are those two trends different styles of gold as well now that we think? Like
not
one is in rock and one is the brecha?
To some extent, so basically, what you have in Northern Ireland and running down into the south of Ireland is a very, and I'm not a geologist, but it's a very big geological structure called the Longford Down Massif, and it's been known for a long, long time to have a significant mineral content. There's the antimony mine down which the gold was found. There was also a small copper mine. And for many years, lead was mined in what was known as the Armagh Monaghan Mining District. But it was only relatively recently that people realized that there was gold there and could perhaps be gold in significant quantities. Our exploration started at this place called Clontibret, and we discovered that along a structure which the geologists call the Orlock Bridge Fault Zone, that is where the gold was coming to surface, and we were able to discover the targets at Clontibret, at Clay Lake, at Rockcurry, at Slieve Dla, and so on, all down along that Orlock Bridge Fault. And the discoveries were made along the fault at, you know, quite close to it, within a mile or two on either side of the actual fault zone or in relation to it. And this is normal. The same position applies as, for example, in the famous Kalgoorlie. You've got a zone there running along of which a lot of magnificent discoveries have been made. And it runs for about 100 kilometers. We've made that discovery, yes. But what we're seeing now is that there is a further structure. It's not the Orlock Bridge Fault. It's called the Skull-Martin Fault. It's another geological structure, a similar sort of one, and it's running parallel to this Orlock Bridge Fault. And it's along it that we've made these discoveries, the one we announced there a couple of weeks ago with the excellent grades, and the one that we've announced this morning. So obviously from management, financial, development point of view, we're interested in its relevance for bringing in further gold discoveries that we'll be developing into mines. But from the geologist's point of view, of course, it's absolutely fascinating to see this and to see the mineral occurrences along it. And you're quite right. Some of the gold that we're seeing and reporting on, particularly, for example, at Clay Lake, is gold which is dissolved in the rock. You can't see it. You can hold up some of the core or some of the rock there, and you may, if you're a very skilled geologist perhaps, be able to surmise from the appearance of it, from the type, from various things that the experts can note, that it is likely to be mineralized. And in due course, the cut sections of it send it off to the lab and it comes back, and they're absolutely right, it is mineralized. But for the layperson, it's very difficult, or even for the geologists themselves. They don't see the gold. And then there's a second sort of occurrence of the gold. The first was the sort of way that it occurred at Clontibret. You couldn't see the gold in the samples and the rock. And the second sort is that in the Clay Lake Gold Nugget, where you can hold the nugget up and look at it. It's now indeed in the Ulster Museum in Belfast. It's a beautiful, beautiful specimen, and we occasionally show it on some of our images and so on. Mm. And there you can see the gold. And the discovery now to the south of Clay Lake, that's the sort of thing you can actually look at the rock, and even a layperson such as myself, and infinitely better the geologists, they can look and say, oh, that's visible gold there, or native gold, as they call it. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see it. That's very nice to see, I must say.
The two types effectively are that you will see the gold, and the other one is we have to effectively analyze the bedrock, and the bedrock is then crushed, and the small amounts of gold exactly come from this. Yeah. So one is 1, 2, 3, 4 grams of gold per ton. The other one potentially is significantly higher. Maybe, yes, we saw 123, but being realistically per ton, maybe you're talking 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 grams of ton per ton when you have large amounts of rock involved.
Well, let's be quite clear about this. You're absolutely right in that when you're mining gold, you may indeed be mining it at 4 grams a ton, or you may indeed be mining it at much less than that. 0.5 is quite a normal point to take, 0.5 of a gram. And if you remember per ton. And if you remember that gold is whatever it is at the moment, something over $1,800, probably about $1,830 or so per 18, ton.
1847 as we speak.
1847, good. Must have gone up $10 or so less since yesterday or the day before. But if you divide that out now, and you know, it's 31 grams to an ounce. So even if you've got half a gram or even less than that, it still comes to, say, if you were to take it, let's say one of our announcements there is 1.2 grams, that would equate to about $70 per ton. Now, the higher up you go, which is why you like to see higher grades, of course, the more valuable it is per ton of rock. But our discovery that we announced the other week, those are extremely high levels. You would be very happy indeed to be mining away at 4 or 5 grams a ton. But when you see the sort of levels that we reported a fortnight ago, those levels, and certainly the 123 and the 77 and 44 and 30-something, they are exceptionally high. And indeed, for many geologists, they tell me, in the lifetime careers, they've never seen levels of over 120 grams a ton. That's enormously high. So it's tremendously exciting. But certainly we wouldn't dream for a moment that it's all going to be like that. Even if a tiny portion of it is like that, we'd be extremely happy.
Yeah, and a tiny portion of it like that will up the grade significantly overall, which is
absolutely. You're quite right.
The intention. I mean, indeed. a few tons like that, and then 100 tons of 2 or 3 grams per ton, you're still
talking. You'd be doing very nicely.
Very high levels in terms of that. So what would you have to say to someone who was sitting on the fence right now and thinking, oh, should I invest in Conroy Gold? What would you say to them?
If you can't see the opportunity here, I don't know if you're ever going to see it. But it is natural and understandable. We've been around the course before. I was talking about it in technical terms, and I'm bringing in a mine before that time, which was a zinc mine. But from a point of view of actual announcements, and we're obliged under the stock exchange rule to make announcements when we have significant or material matter to disclose, such as we've just done this morning and previously. And we had the experience before, again, in Ireland, in which we had all the information was out there in the market, and our share price in that particular case with that company, Conroy Petroleum, was in the low 20s, and it stayed like that for months and months and months, even though it was in the market and for people to look at and so on. And quite frankly, it was only when some people from Canada who had more appreciation of what the results meant, and they started to buy in and did very nicely indeed, buying at 20, 30, 40, 50p, because eventually those shares went up to £7.50. So they made quite a lot of money. I can't guarantee what the shares are going to do.
We need to find some
no way, but, you know.
This is what did you say?
So we need to find some Canadians. You know any?
Well, Canadians, Canadian. First, English second, and I regret to say local people here were last to start coming.
While you're in Toronto, just round up the Canadians. I'm sure you can get a few investors along as well.
Well, no. We certainly, curiously enough, we're in the position, of course, now, since we have a joint venture partner covering all the very heavy expenses that up until now we had to cover and raise money with all the difficulties of doing that. We don't have to do that anymore. We can may raise some money at some stage or need some money for the, obviously, you're still running a company and that sort of thing, and all the various things that go with that, your stock exchange fees and all the rest of it, they still have to be paid. But we don't have the huge demand of having to pay for drilling and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a very changed situation for us. Or there may be something else that we see that's worth looking at, whether in Ireland or elsewhere, that we may. But you know, the demand on us for money is now of a totally different magnitude in the sense of the amount. And also, of course, people are now sort of, you know, from various companies and so on, I don't think there'd be too much difficulty in raising other funds if we so wish to do so. But
I mean, if
your latest accounts came out anyway, so you had 923,000 euros left in November. So I'm quite sure, unless you had a very big Christmas party, you still got.
It was a good party, I can assure you.
A good party.
Another 900,000 bad one.
But you still have plenty of money left for the rest of this year, anyway, at the very least.
There's one other. I mean, if for instance, and this is a supposition, if you know there was another interested party came along, wanted to, you know, like a tri-party agreement, would you be up for sort of selling off a certain percentage of your remaining 42.5% on the project, or is that completely out of the question?
No, I think I think you raise a very 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 significant point there, in that. It is turning out to be a pretty huge gold district. I mean, you can see it even from our announcements recently, the potential, the amount of work that has to be done just to bring in a single deposit. There's a lot of work in that. We're now beginning to look at a situation in which you could have a whole series of them. There's a huge amount of work. It covers a very large area. And we're very fortunate. We have a joint venture, but this project is potentially of so much magnitude that I wouldn't totally exclude the possibility that one could even bring in, assuming our joint venture partners agreed, but that other parties mightn't even be interested in coming in. It is potentially so big, and I mean other very major companies. But you know, that's for the future.
We've asked Richard many times what his favourite roast is. I think we know it's the beef, the well done beef. So we'll probably give that one a swerve this week. But on that note, I think we'll say thanks very much for your time, Professor Richard Conroy. And you know, we look forward to welcoming you back on. I'm sure it won't be too long with the you know, recent run of news we've had. It's been pretty much one a week, I think, of late. So you know, book the trend, and hopefully you can keep delivering.
Thank you very much.
Always good to see Richard on. He's been on quite a lot recently, hasn't he? So, as I say, the news flow seems to be stepping up a bit now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's only going to continue as well, to be honest. As more and more money is spent and more work is taken upon them by themselves through DEMIRE, then DEMIRE Export, it's going to happen. And as he said, he's off to this trade show next week in Canada, big mining show. And, you know, you asked him the question, would they be open to another joint venture? And it's possible, you know, because it's such a huge area now. Even these new licenses that they're going to apply for, not necessarily part of this joint venture. So,
yeah,
you know, who knows?
It's exciting for sure. What else has moved this week? I mean, there's one or two that have been of interest. Some have obviously moved very well. We'll come on to those in a minute. But the one I want to talk about is Destiny Pharma, DEST. It's been around for many, many years. They actually announced there was two RNSs that coincided. There was the intention to place shares at a price of 35 pence to raise approximately £7 million before expenses. And that coincided with an RNS that mentioned that they'd signed an exclusive agreement with Sebela Pharmaceuticals for the North American rights of the NTCD-M3, which is its lead asset for the prevention of Clostridioides difficile infection, CDI, recurrence. Sebela will lead and finance the clinical development and commercialization of NTCD-M3 in North America, with Destiny Pharma retaining the majority of rights for Europe and the rest of the world. The agreement could be worth up to $570 million to Destiny Pharma in milestones alone, and includes upfront payments, success-based development milestones, sales revenues-based milestone payments, and tiered double-digit royalties. Phase 3 studies are anticipated to commence in 2024. So that one looks exciting. Obviously, it dropped from 50p, around that 49-48p mark when the announcement came out, dropped back down into the sort of early 30s, and it's now, or at the end of the day on Friday, it was trading around the 35 pence. So an ability to get in at the placing price, you know, that's the reality of this. I guess there'll be probably the usual caveat there that says, you know, there will be flippers, you know, flipping the shares presumably in that one. But it certainly looks good going forward with this exclusivity agreement.
Yeah, everybody ignored the news.
Yeah, they did.
Just focused on the placing.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. If they'd announced the news before the placing, then it'd probably be a pound a share.
And then drop back down to 35p. So.
And then the placing came out and it would have dropped down to maybe 70p. So, I mean, the market is at the moment. It's bizarre, isn't it?
It swings around.
But, I mean, it's a life or it's a company-changing RNS. And everybody just went, no, you've placed at 35p, so therefore I'm not going to... Yeah. The market maker's going to mark it down. Sure, you could buy at 32, I think, or 33 during the week. In fact, it's given a price range 52-week 29.19. So you could buy below the price. And I think the CEO did buy it below the placing price to prove.
Yeah,
prove
there was a holdings RNS, wasn't there, a couple of days after that? I think it was on the Monday, the 27th, there was... It was basically Nick Rogers, chairman, purchased 20,000 ordinary shares at 33.94. So he, well done. He got in below the placing price as well. So, yeah.
The scenario with this US-based company, there's no way that they are initiating all of these costs themselves if they don't think that this is going to likely pass the next stages and then go onto the market. So yeah, I mean, obviously they take chances, the pharma companies, but they take very
70p 52 week high. And if you look back to the trend in 2021, so only a couple of sort of about this time 2 years ago, it was £2.40 around the 240 mark, something like that. So certainly has been much higher in the last couple of years. See what this news does. I mean, I think it's just a case of that, you know, the market's really understanding just how significant this news is.
Yeah, it's, again, what can you say?
So the other one that's moved well was Panthera Resources. PAT is the ticker. They've got basically the Bhukia project, and it's an advanced stage gold project located in the state of Rajasthan in India. So there's not many companies on the markets that have got kind of assets or large assets in India. IGPL had invested over $50 million in the Bhukia project before the Indian government wrongfully denied renewal of the project's mining lease in August 2019. And there's an arbitration claim against the Republic of India, seeking compensation for the losses caused to IGPL as a result of India's breaches of its obligations under the BIT, which is this new regulation. And the claim is being pursued under the rules of the United Nations Commission of International Trade Law. So this company, IGPL, will provide further updates in due course based on how well they get on. But I was listening to Mark Bolton, the CEO, talk on Proactive a few days ago. And basically, he was saying that this company, they basically have something like a 90% success rate on these arbitration claims. So I think with the due diligence they've done, it's looking quite interesting, that's for sure. I think it's one to watch. I think it was up about 45% on Friday. So certainly the market took a few days to respond to the news, but it looks good.
Yep, it looks like it's, I mean, these legal companies do a lot of due diligence before they take on any. The other thing that was stated in that Proactive thing was that they only take on 1%, less than 1% of companies that have an issue. And in other words, so they're taking all the people that come to them and taking one out of every 100 and saying, okay, we will fund this. So that's why they have a 90% success rate, because they're fairly certain that there's a result there, you know, because the company's been undermined or the law has been broken in terms of that. So yeah, so I'm not surprised what happened on Friday, but the news did come out on what, Wednesday, was it, or even Tuesday? From my perspective this week, we've had news from Chilbrands to say that the 0% vapes have now come out, starting to hit the market in the US. Chill Zero, they're called. Different flavors of zero nicotine, full flavor, total satisfaction is the thing. Must say the packaging looks very good. Chill started to move there on Friday. So, yeah, I think it has now this the company has transformed itself now. It's going to be a marketplace and vapes. And those two things, I really think, are going to be massive revenue and profit generators, and can be scaled massively without really a lot of cost. So this is now becoming a really scalable two-pronged business. The CBD is going to be there as part of the package, but really this is now two prongs. You've got a marketplace which is going to hold many, many different companies selling on chill.com, and you've got vapes, whether they be zero ones which have been launched, and then maybe the CBD ones on top of that, but nicotine free, which means it's covering or getting out of an awful lot of regulatory issues, because basically you're just puffing. What are you puffing? You're just puffing a flavor, aren't you? Anybody can literally have them, you know. So if you want to calm down on a night,
and there's a lot of press at the moment in the UK about the problems, addictions of younger people, you know, younger sort of school age kids of sort of 15, 16 year olds, maybe even younger, who are getting hooked on these really low quality vapes, you know, the flavored vapes, the peaches and the grapes, and you know, use the health benefits that they're awful, that, you know, what it does to them, popcorn lung, and I think there's almost a pandemic of this in schools, and kids getting hold of them they shouldn't have, and they're not good for you. It's as simple as that. I genuinely, you know, they're saying that the nicotine, you know, that they're fine and it's better than smoking, but actually I don't think there's any proof that they are. It really is. So I welcome these new chill vapes.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to be possibly any worse, but if you put nicotine into your body, it ain't going to be any better.
No.
You know, you still put in nicotine, and maybe not all the other crap that goes with it. But you've
but it's the liquid, isn't it? It's the liquids that are in them that nobody knows, and it's causing serious health problems to younger children who have not, the bodies are not fully, you know, properly formed at those ages of 11, 12, 13, are they? You know, the lungs are damaging themselves.
Yeah, whereas the other one, no nicotine, it's flavor. Yeah. You just get in a sensation of a flavor with basically, I don't know what the liquid is, but I don't think it's in any way health damaging. But it was interesting, wasn't it? Because I'm sort of trying to combine two things here. Do you remember we talked with Robin Brundell about Tech Minerals and the fact that they're waiting for their license for the lithium ion batteries? And he talked only very briefly, but there's a massive market in these lithium ion batteries for the vapes. You know, how are you going to get rid of the vape? You know, because they're all going into landfill. Some are going to explode, some are going to cause fires, some are going to, you know, that, you know, once they're disposed of, there needs to be a disposal system put into place.
Yeah, well, I even alluded to it, didn't I, when we talked briefly, just said, like, they need some sort of deposit system on there to make a commodity of them. So when you know, you buy your vape, you take your old one back to the supermarket or wherever, or the shelf, newsagent, and then they exchange you, you get a new one, and then you get a deposit back on it or something. You know, that would be simple, because you're starting, and then they're sent properly to the recycling areas then, aren't they?
Yeah, as you say, so instead of paying £9, you pay £10, and each time you go back, you get your pound back or whatever.
Yeah.
Deposit it, you get your pound, and then you buy another one. You deposit, you pay your pound, you get another one, however much they may be. And that would seem to make sense. And also then give the possibility to then recycle those lithium-ion batteries and keep the black mass that comes out the other end into the system. So, yeah, it would... And the big inverted commas tobacco companies have got to get involved in this, because they want to sell literally billions of vapes, so they're going to have to get involved, you know. And I think when they start to see somebody coming onto the market with a no percent nicotine and maybe CBD vapes, they're going to get interested. They're going to get interested for sure, and either want to be involved or copy.
Yeah,
one or the other.
The other notable movers this week, there's iNexus Global. I think they moved about 55%. The cloud-based software provider, iNexus Global, said it expects to record another year of double-digit growth, and their key market continues to expand. iNexus Global and their digital solutions for remote working teams that provide a viable alternative to incumbent software benefits from the trend of working from home. So very, very hot topic at the moment, working from home, and obviously the cloud-based software. Anything else on there on your notes there to talk about?
There was MAST, wasn't it? MAST in those in these auctions. The government basically the government has now said that on the was it T1 and T4, they've now got a T1, but the T4 was effectively 750% higher, was it, I think? So that was quite a jump from sort of, I think it was 8,000 to 63,000, I think it was. So yeah, incredible jump in terms of that. And that's really cash paid to the people so that they can be available. They don't actually have to provide anything specific for that, but be available to provide electricity when necessary. So it's almost like a fee that they're paid to be available. So that looks very promising. I mean, I think it's not going away. We're going to need this energy security. And again, I think from a cost or from a price point of view, it seems ridiculously cheap in terms of what it has available.
I mean, the other one that was interesting was Purple Bricks. I don't know if you saw that news. They commenced a strategic review and put themselves up for sale, basically. I mean, at the beginning of the week, I think on Monday, Tuesday, they were trading around the 7-8 pence mark, and they did move up above the 10, and I think they finished the day around the 9-9.5p. It's quite a good week. But Zeus and PricewaterhouseCoopers have been appointed to conduct the formal sale process. And Purple Bricks basically said that the strategic review would consider the continuation of the company remaining a listed company. So it's going to be one of them where we're like, is it going to remain? Is there going to be a suspension announcement? Is it going to, you know what I mean? It's like, it's going to be one of those another made.com where they're potentially up for sale. Mm. Suitors are there. They've called in Zeus and Pricewaterhouse. It's a risky one to be staying over the weekend, I think.
Did the mark or did this system that they were in sort of following actually make any money?
I'm not sure how profitable they are. I've not really looked at the financials, but I think they have been an ailing company for quite a while now, haven't they, Purple Bricks? They've been up and down.
It's cutthroat business, and people were not paying large amounts to sell their houses, were they? And I think we're going to, I don't know whether we will go back to a non-digital system, which we actually involves people, you know, and them getting commissions and stuff like that. I don't know. We'll have to see. It's a market that has changed significantly, isn't it, over the last 10-15 years, and become very digital based. The other news on Friday was Ben's Creek, wasn't it, that they got rid of another one of the sort of debts, the CLNs. The MBU Capital basically decided that they would take shares at, now the CLN was at 60p and it was deferred down to 30p. The current market price is 20p. So they've taken a bit of a hit there in terms of that, but it also means that the shares, they get significantly more shares than they were going to get at 60p. So it's quid pro quo maybe, but it now means that's off the balance books or off the books. And Ben is looking more and more lean and keen every day. And yeah, how it's priced for
bringing in some cash, bringing in a bit of cash flow, and then obviously remove substantial levels of debt. You know, what's not to like?
Yeah, £80 million market capitalization probably around now. And, you know, I think in January they did 55,000 tons of clean coal was shipped. And we don't know the exact amount, but I think that's probably revenue of $12 to $14 million. How much of that is profit? Again, we really don't know, but we're hopefully going to be speaking to Adam next week and try and get some more info out of him in terms of that. But it seems that, you know, at £80 million now, that sort of goal of the 750,000 tons to a million tons a year is going to be very possible. The seams seem to be better. So therefore, the production levels are increasing, even with only the one high wall miner. The second one is coming, I'm sure. But yeah, we can get some more information from him next week. But yeah, I think it's all setting up that, you know, it's going to be a good producing company. And it did refer to dividends again in the RNS, that they were cleaning up the balance sheet so they could pay dividends as soon as possible. So Who knows?
Yeah. There was one in the pharma space this week that's been, it's been talk of Twitter. It's quite a popular retail stock, was Poolbeg Pharma. They had positive results from their bacterial lipopolysaccharide human challenge. A bit of a mouthful, that one.
Challenge. I was going to say, try and say that after a few drinks.
Yeah. For the Pol-B-001 product. And basically the trial found that this Pol-B-001 to have a systemic and localized inflammatory response and was found to be safe. So Pol-B-001 targets the symptoms of severe influenza and other acute inflammatory conditions. So they were up about 10% at the end of the week. And the one that was a bit of, let's call it the shaker, it dropped about 25%. And this was one of those that was that's got a big retail. We've mentioned it before, was Baron Oil. Some of the Telegram groups have got nearly 1,000 members. And there was big talk of, oh, yeah, you've got to get in before the CPR, before the competent person's report comes out. And what happened? The competent person report came out at the beginning of the week and the share price dropped 25% and didn't recover. They basically released this CPR for the Chudich PSC this week, their license in Indonesia. And it basically estimated that this license contains 1,084 billion cubic feet of gross P-mean contingent gas resources. Baron Oil says that the resource is likely large enough to be commercially viable and opens the doors to further evaluation. The company also noted the differences in terminology and methodology used in the CPR and their own prior assumptions as the reason for underwhelming data from the CPR. So that's the reason why it obviously dropped down, because there was talk of, prior assumptions being made and, different terminology and methodology. So not great, really, in that reporting.
Yeah, and the one that I've had, it seems absolutely bizarre, is Prospect Energies. No, it's gone from 20p down to 10p.
No idea what's happening on that stock at the moment.
On no news at all. And now, if you want an opportunity to buy into that and that story, then I think now's a great time.
So we've talked, Ben, obviously, that side of the met coal. What about the coking coal? What about Contango? Because they had some good news this week.
Ah, yes.
So the news came out of the completion of the pilot coke plant and the first coke manufacturer at the Lubu project, so in Zimbabwe. So the pilot coke plant's been constructed to provide on-site capability to manufacture coke from washed coking coal produced at Lubu for testing by future offtake partners, obviously, which have been announced in the past. And then the ultimate coke batteries to be installed at Lubu for the future production cells will be considerably larger and a different specification. So that's good news.
Yeah, no, that's great news. And the wash plant's nearly complete as well for the clean coal to sell just metallurgical coal or coking coal. But I think, again, the market didn't really react to it. But I think what it's actually saying is that they've now produced this coke, and the use of this coke is not to sell it. It's to show the people that they were dealing with, the multinational that they have a memorandum of understanding with, to show them that it's possible to, I presume, that multinational is going to come in and fund a bigger project so that they can have the offtake agreement on that coking coal. So if that is the case, then, it's game on, basically. They're going to have selling the coking coal and also selling coke, which means there'll be two good streams of income coming from this situation, very shortly, end of this year in terms of the mining thing. I mean, they should be getting revenue from coke and coal in the next few months. But after that, that's going to then give them an ability to scale up pretty significantly.
Good. Well, on that note, I wish you all the best for the game in a couple of hours. let's see how we get on.
Bring on United and let's see what happens. Yeah, I will watch it with bated breath.
It'll be good. I mean, just hope we turn up, started playing well, got the Carabao Cup, got through, into the next round of the FA Cup. So, yeah, I think there's another trophy for us at least. Got to be one more trophy in us this season. It'd be nice to get two. Whether that be the Europa, we got Real Betis in the week, and yeah, should be good. Looking forward to it. There's a bit more. He's got the team a bit more passion playing. You know, playing Castillo.
Well, for the first, I would say for the first time in quite a few years.
Oh yeah.
I'm concerned about playing Manchester United.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been the case for many a year, I have to say, because we've stuffed you for the last number of years. And even when you have got some sort of result, before the game...
If Garnacho turns up and Casemiro, then it's bye-bye. If you play like you have done the last few games, then, yeah, you'll get mauled. But
I don't know. Don't know whether it's going to be a mauling either way, to be honest. We will see. We will see. It's about... I think it's going to be about chances and who takes them. I think both teams are going to get chances.
On that note, have a good rest of the weekend and we'll catch up next week.
Indeed. Speak to you then.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net